is CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor. Here's John Batchelor.
The global economy. Joseph Sternberg writes political economics. He's based in London for the Wall Street Journal editorial board. And his most recent column about the People's Republic of China is striking because it confronts this word deflation. What does it mean for an economy that is regarded as miraculous, second most powerful in the world, to be going through a deflationary period? It means that there are mysteries to be plumbed. The General Secretary and President of China, for life perhaps, Xi Jinping, is now in Johannesburg meeting with the BRICS, Brazil, Russia, India, China, South Africa, and applicants to the BRICS ranging around the world, 40 different countries, all looking to get into the BRICS because China's the big and successful one so far. And yet, Joe, a very good evening to you. Xi Jinping is not going to bring up deflation when he's talking to his colleagues in Johannesburg. However, it is a story that is echoed around the world ever since it was published right now. There is deflation at the marketplace. There's deflation at the retail level. But then there's asset deflation. All things are going on in China. What is the more dangerous to their miracle, Joe? And what are they doing about it? Good evening to you.
Hi, John. Well, I think the key thing that is going on in China right now is this deflation that seems to be starting on some asset prices. Now, I mean, we're talking about deflation in China because a couple of weeks ago we had their monthly price data, which suggested that consumer prices had fallen a bit on a year-on-year basis in July. And you know, because of the way that a lot of economists tend to think about consumer price inflation and the economy, that triggered some concerns in China. Now, I think that those concerns are misplaced because the asset prices are by far the bigger deal. That refers to things like especially property in the Chinese context, because property, you know, investment speculation and therefore rising property prices over the long term have been so crucial to China's economic growth model and its growth story over the past couple decades. And yet we're seeing that that's starting to reverse a bit. Yeah, certainly the Communist Party under Xi Jinping has been somewhat successful in starting to tamp down on credit in the real estate market, which is diminishing the demand and starting to exercise some downward pull on prices. But that means that anyone whose business depended on lending against real estate might be seeing the value of some of those loans marked down a bit now, or the collateral in jeopardy. And you know, certainly local governments are going to run into problems because their financing model is largely based on the sale of property, and they have created a lot of investment funds at the local government level that are linked to property. And so I think that a big part of the story that we're starting to see here, and the real threat, is that as some of these property and other asset prices in China start moderating just a little bit, how does that start rippling through a financial system that is very vulnerable to even modest changes in some of these asset prices?
What were local government financing vehicles? The acronym is LGFVs. What were they, and what purpose did they serve, and where are they now?
Well, I mean, what they are is a big problem in China's economy right now. So these are, you know, generally investment companies of one form or another that are set up, sponsored, you know, backed by local governments. So we're talking cities, municipalities, that level. And typically, their business model is that they will lend to politically favored, you know, companies, or they will, you know, support the construction of big infrastructure projects in the area. And against that, they will pledge the revenue that the government would expect to receive from various land sales over time. And, you know, this kind of vehicle was really instrumental to a lot of the development that we've seen in the Chinese economy over the past few decades, because this is what was paying for all of those roads and bridges and airports and the like. But the problem is that they then are very exposed to downturns in property prices, which diminish both the revenue that their local government sponsors can get from these land sales, and also potentially means that some of their own debtors aren't able to repay the loans that they're holding on their balance sheets. And there is growing evidence that some of these vehicles are starting to run into financial trouble under this combination of pressures.
Joe, let me see if I have the picture. You're a municipality and you have undeveloped land, which you then price very high, and you borrow against it. You use it for an asset leverage. The value of the property plunges coterminous with all the other deflation in the land, and your loan is underwater, and you can't pay it, or you don't have enough cash to maintain it. The People's Bank of China or some other non-bank then lends you money so that you can make your payments, but you go deeper in the hole. That's been happening for some time. Have they reached a limit? You can no longer borrow to pay the money you've borrowed.
Well, they don't appear to be reaching a limit yet, but this is going to create a growing problem for the government in Beijing to figure out what, if anything, it can or should do to bail out some of these local government vehicles, precisely because the amounts of money and the role in the economy are so big. And so I think that the so far what you're seeing are demands from some of the local governments for help from Beijing to deal with this. And they can potentially orchestrate a bailout of some form, especially since China has a relatively closed financial system. But I think that the broader economic problem is going to be that for as long as you have the distress in some of these vehicles, they also will not be able to continue supporting the sort of construction projects or other things that they were paying for. And that activity was a big part of Chinese GDP for the past couple of decades. And so their ability to pay for that is going to be pretty diminished for as long as these problems are persisting.
Is there a model that we can point to about what they've achieved? I've read that they're entering into a Japan situation of no growth for decades. Is that one model that works here?
Well, I think that is definitely a big danger here, because the key problem that Japan always experienced is that it took them a very long time to grapple with all of the bad debts that had built up in the economy during the boom period. And there was a lot of resistance to just, taking the huge but relatively short-term pain of the write-downs and then just moving onward. And instead, there was a lot of extending and pretending. Now, I think that extend and pretend temptation is going to be very strong in China as well, but that then means that you're going to have these legacy debt mountains in the financial system that are going to weigh on the ability of banks and other investors to fund productive economic activity and development in the future.
The consumer. I remember reading that the standing committee, the Chinese Communist Party, was counting on the consumer to help revive their economy so that they didn't have to depend entirely on sales overseas, exports. The consumer has not shown up, or at least the reporting says the consumer is being cautious. Why?
Well, I think there are two related reasons for that. One is actually the property downturn, because Chinese households, especially in the middle class, pour huge resources into housing, which they viewed not only as a residence, but also as a form of savings. And I think that as property prices come down, you have sort of a reverse wealth effect where consumers feel like they are not as well off as they used to be. They are less economically secure, and so that makes them inclined to spend less. But I think that the related problem is that the government has not really created anything else for people to do. So I think that if you have all of these factors weighing on productive private sector investment in the economy, you're limiting your ability to create more and higher paying jobs. So you're not going to have a big consumer boost as long as you have a jobs problem. And remember, they have very high youth unemployment in particular. And as soon as you have this broader investment and productivity problem, which means that those jobs that you do have are not paying as much as they could or should be if the economy were more productive or was, you know, experiencing faster productivity growth. And so I think that it's not just the fall in asset prices, but it's Beijing's struggle to come up with anything that the economy can pivot into that will create those jobs and rising wages.
You write that the solution is to jumpstart the productivity. What will that look like if it happens?
Well, I think you would know if they were serious about it if, for example, they were to end some of the rhetorical and regulatory assaults that they've been launching against the private sector, which has always been a big boost for productive investment, innovation, entrepreneurship in the Chinese economy. Xi Jinping, for the past decade, has generally been pretty hostile to the private sector, but that is a mistake because that's where a lot of the high-quality economic growth can come from. And so I think that, you know, any signs that they are changing or stepping back from that hostility to the market economy or the reforms that they started doing 20, 30 years ago would be a sign that Beijing is starting to grapple seriously with some of these problems.
And the opposite would be if they put more emphasis on the state-owned enterprises and maximize surveillance and insist that they don't have to report numbers such as unemployment. That would be a sign that they're not going to change, that it will get worse. Is that correct, Joe?
Exactly. I think that will be a sign. And since it is what we're seeing right now, it's a worrying sign that their solution to some of these problems might just actually be to tamp down more on state and party control of the economy and hope that through direction they can achieve what the market would ordinarily achieve through innovation or entrepreneurship.
Joseph Sternberg, a member of the editorial board of the Wall Street Journal. He writes political economics. He's based in London. I'm John Bannon.